I must say, having listened to these discussions today, looking at this room, I understand why Jaap Dorpsgreffer has left, is leaving the office. I'm not quite sure whether Prime Minister Rasmussen is joining the office, because it clearly is a huge task. I'm somewhat reminded of the a recent program I saw on television by extraordinary naturalist Richard Attenborough, it was about the lovemaking of elephants. And those of you who've seen it may recall, it takes a hell of a long time to get there. And it seems to me that is my first remark on the task that is going to be ahead of you. Basically, I must admit I'm not happy with the term strategic concept. Now, I'm not going to do what Germans like to do, namely to start a semantic debate. But it seems to me you have a double task. One is to provide strategic analysis and a mission statement for NATO. These are not the same things. And I think we've discovered this today as we saw the wide range of security problems and the wide need of taking other people into account and bringing them in. And this simply cannot be done everything by NATO. And to pretend that you have a neat strategic analysis which then fits only to NATO would be quite wrong. So one has to, I think, see these as two separate things. A general assessment of what we face before we then come to what it means for NATO. And the assessment of what it means is much wider than what NATO can do, and I think it must be recognized right at the front, because otherwise it looks as if NATO wants to decorate itself with all sorts of competences and responsibilities, which we know it doesn't have, will not get, and probably cannot perform. So I would suggest to keep these two things separate. Secondly, the question that has occupied us this morning on who is the addressee for this and how much should it be geared to the public. It seems to me, if I look at this room, if that's the opening exercise, it means it has to be addressed to the public. And if you're going to have it follow up by all sorts of seminars in a variety of capitals, then you cannot just say, well, terribly sorry, chaps, it's only for us. It's not for the public. In a way, it seems to me, the decision has already been taken. And that means that you will have to really think of the product differently from the strategic concept 10 years ago. You have to think of it as an exercise also in public presentation and justification. I think, Jaap, if I may recall, a few years ago when just had taken on the job, you were saying you had great difficulties in explaining to your daughter what on earth NATO was doing in Afghanistan. Now, she's become older and wiser, but there are lots of daughters around who raise the same question. Not quite sure how many daughters you can, but perhaps they ask you the same question. What on earth are we doing there? And unless we face that directly, I don't think we're going to get there. So that means it has to be addressed to the public, and that means it must not have 68 paragraphs. The third point on this, do not exaggerate the threats in order to justify NATO. It's something that strategists like to do because they like NATO, so they have a long list of what terrible things can happen in order then to justify the institution. And finally, on this question of the strategic analysis, we've always talked about the 21st century. Now, that's still a number of 91 years away before the end of the century. And I think we should have in our minds a time limit that is significantly shorter. And the time limit that I would suggest is something like 5 years, not even 10 years, given the changes that are happening, given the situation in Afghanistan, given the relationship with Russia, given the uncertainty that we're facing, and the sense that I think this morning both François Esbourg and others have made clear to us that these are changing. We're basing ourselves on changing sands. Now, as to the mission statement, namely, what can and should NATO do, I do want to emphasize something that a number of people have mentioned, but not only because they've mentioned it, because I think they're right in mentioning it. NATO's unique selling point, ladies and gentlemen, is it is the one existing multilateral transatlantic forum. Now, this is it is the unique selling point, is the one reason why countries want to join. It is the one reason why it has held together. It's one reason why it's problems with the European Union. It is the unique selling point, the transatlantic relationship. Now, we have seen perhaps too little of this relationship being expressed in the active discussions of the alliance, and that's been so for a number of years. If I, even in this present administration, I'm not sure whether future of strategic arms control has ever been discussed in the alliance. So we have to make the alliance again the place where transatlantic security issues are being debated and discussed. And this really has to be, in order to make it visible, so the unique selling point is coming out. Secondly, I think we have to, early on in this paper, address the engagement in Afghanistan. Again, it's a unique situation in which we are. It is, and you yourself, Secretary General, have again and again heard, it is the major, direct, concrete challenge at the moment. And unless we can explain in this, whatever we call it, mission statement or strategic concept, the reason why we're there and how we're going to look at the development, what kind of criteria for success we can define, I think then we would miss an important point. We also, I think, have to make clear that this is not a precedent. Afghanistan is not a precedent. It's not a typical way in which NATO is going to get involved in the future. We should therefore not have this in the chapter of NATO being out of area. Afghanistan is a special point, is the most pressing point, and needs to be addressed as such. Third element here deals with the question of enlargement. Perhaps we have to rethink that. 10 years ago, clearly, or even 20 years ago, enlargement was the most important activity that NATO had. Whatever the process of enlargement is going to be in the next 5 to 10 years, it's not going to be the most important activity. What is the most important task is reassurance. Some of you may remember Michael Howard's article on that issue in the Cold War era. Reassurance is what we have to provide. Reassurance to our own people, reassurance to our neighbors, and reassurance to others. It seems to me if we look at enlargement, stabilization in Europe, in terms of reassurance, we may also have a handle for making this process less dangerous. And this is what Dimitri Tenin, don't remember, has said. We had the last peaceful enlargement. The next enlargements are not going to be peaceful. So let's think of another term to enlargement, which is still better than expansion, which was the original term. Let's think of reassurance as a task to our own citizens and beyond. Also, a discussion which has been, I think, very fascinating this afternoon, basically on can't NATO get involved in all sorts of other things. Let's remember, NATO is not a military Red Cross and must not be a military Red Cross. If it tries to do that, then I think it will lose its focus and its capabilities to deal with these issues. Which then leads me to the means. We haven't discussed them very much. Some people have tried to get us to discuss the means. We've had some discussion just now on it. We all realize that the money for the means is going to be less. So what do we do? European defense is one of the most wasteful operations that one can imagine. And one of the hopes one might have, and the general here, Betanja, has been referring to it, said, we'll have to do with less. And we finally may have a need to think seriously of the pooling of resources and the things that have been in the minds of many people in this, looking at this alliance for a very long time. We should, again, it seems to me, think about the notion of deterrence. We've discussed it mostly in traditional NATO meetings as a nuclear issue. It's not a nuclear issue. Let's think of ways in which the kind of worries and concerns that are out there can be addressed by a more imaginative use of deterrence, not nuclear, but deterrence as such. It's not a nuclear concept. It's a very traditional concept of coping with challenges. And let's think much more of what we need to do in terms of deterrence. And the final point on this one, whatever the nuclear issue is going to be in this alliance, it has to be made quite clear in the strategic concept that the posture that NATO will have in this field must be compatible with the efforts that are currently going on to reduce the reliance on nuclear weapons. It seems to me that's a must, It's been hinted at a number of interventions, but I think it's very clear that we cannot do less than that. Which then leads me finally, Chairman, to do's and don'ts. Do not fight the ideological wars of the past. I think EU-NATO relationship belongs in that field. We have now fought these wars. It's been clarified. The problems are mostly those of how bureaucratic institutions are able to deal with each other rather than fundamentally different issues and different concepts of threat and what to do about that. And I think we just had remarks on that. Article 5, it sometimes in this discussion seems to me that nobody has read Article 5 for a very long time. Article 5 in the Cold War was defined not so much by the wording, but by the fact that one needed to respond immediately in a nuclear deterrence environment with forces. We're not living in this environment anymore. And Article 5, drafted in 1949, in its present wording, the wording it's had all along, seems to me to be one that is quite applicable to today in the flexibility that it provides. This doesn't mean that there's a lack of cohesion in an alliance. The alliance itself, as Laurie Friedman has reminded us, is in itself, even without Article 5, a deterrent to attack any of the members. Article 5 is no longer what it used to be. It's no longer a guarantee. It's an expression of alliance, but it leaves, as you know, the action to individual governments. Second, do's and don't force consensus, or don't try to force consensus on controversial issues in this document of the strategic concept. Governments, there will be an attempt to do that, but governments will not be forced to change their positions by the wording of such a document. They will change their positions. Unfortunately, we have NATO to work with governments, and the discussion, of course, will go on. It's a framework. It's not more than that. It does not nail things down to the way in which white papers or government white papers can do, where you have a clear hierarchy and where governments can say, all right, this is the basis on which we decide, and this is how we're going to allocate our money. NATO cannot do that. It's a different idea how to organize such a document. Stick with what you're good for. Do not try empire building. It's not going to work for NATO. Networking is fine, but it's also extremely time-consuming. It's also a very good escape from doing other things. It's very nice to say we're working with the Red Cross, and we're working with NGOs, and we're working with the United Nations, we're working with everyone, working with the World Food Programme, we're working with these and that. Very good contacts. But it cannot replace in any way the sheer task of being there as an alliance, coordinating the views of its members, dealing with the threats that arise, and trying to respond to them. Climate change, energy security, if it goes beyond the protection of sea lanes and pipelines and infrastructure, do not seem to me something that NATO should dabble in. If it were to address them, it would just dabble in them, not more. This is not what NATO is good for. So, final remark, where would I now go from here? What are the next steps? It would seem to me, and I've had a brief word with the Secretary General Designate on this over lunch, it seemed to me the next stages might be not a repetition of this wide range of discussion subjects we've had here, but perhaps a much more focused one on individual, potentially contentious issues, in which one could have a pro and a con position so that there's a sharpening of the exchange and a focusing on specific problems. Many of them have been raised here. I think that would help both internally and externally. It would help to clarify issues in our own minds, but it would also give people outside the feeling that this is an alliance that debates rather than signs documents. Now, if this all happens, the elephant will perhaps have finished his task. Thank you very much.